Welcome to the American Family Farmer, the weekly radio program for the small independent farm owners and those interested in how your food gets from the farm to your table. Here's your host, lifelong family farmer, Doug Steppen.
Every week we get together to try to help those who want to be successful family farmers, people running successful family businesses in support of ag, and the locavore movers and shakers, how to hold on to this thing we call choice. What is it about America that seems to find itself in a predicament from time to time, more so recently, where we see the small farms, the mid-sized family farms, going out of business because they can't keep up with the big, huge mega farms and the financing that they have backing them up? So what's this all about? Well, the latest incarnation of this, and we've been talking about this off and on for the last couple of months here on this program, the Dark Act. This is something that is a dark cloud over the horizon of family farms. It's not unlike the dark clouds that come from other government entity. The most recent entity, the EPA, telling you that a puddle of water in your driveway is a riverway or a waterway, and they want to make sure that they're supervising what's going on in your driveway. But then there are the other things that have been passed the past couple of years, Food Safety Preservation Act, or whatever that nonsense is called, which requires small farmers to do things that big farmers don't have to do. And the real problem is the big farmers, not the small farmers. So we've been around that horn and try to bring you up to date on how things can be overcome. And I will tell you, with the Dark Act, it was successful. Even though the vote was slim, I think the good guys won by one vote, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. It still was a win. So joining me now to talk about this is Ellen Moyer, who is a writer, a speaker, an environmental advocate. She wants to help restore the environment, promote a healthier way for us to live and eat and prosper here. I know that you write for the Huffington Post with regularity. I read the Huffington Post every day. There are a lot of things that are going on right now in government, and they certainly make great fodder for conversation. I'm interested, though, in your turn on the Dark Act. This whole problem, Ellen, if we want to go into it, I guess I should ask for you to explain from your point of view what you think the problem is, because I've certainly done it plenty of times, and see if you and I, it's not important for us to be on the same page, but I'm guessing we pretty much are on the same page. So why don't you go back through your knowledge of the Dark Act, what it was supposed to do, why you think it didn't get passed.
Yeah, well, the Dark Act is an effort by the food industry to squash any state efforts to require labeling of genetically modified organisms in food. And there are about 30 states that are in some part of the process of passing a law saying, tell us what's in the food. Tell us if there are GMOs in the food, because the federal government has completely dropped the ball on this.
Well, it isn't so much they've dropped the ball. The ball has been influenced by the people who are in charge, to the point of it being obvious that there is not only coercion, but collusion with people that come
true
to work in these agencies from the outfits that they're regulating.
That's so true. You know, 73% of Monsanto lobbyists once held jobs in the U.S. government. So there's this revolving door between government and industry, and the agencies that were originally supposed to work for us citizens now instead work for industry.
And then
so
they go
you
back.
You're so right. Yes.
They cross they keep going back and forth from one to the other. They influence policy. They get the jobs because they or their companies have sent campaign contributions, so they get the attention of the people in charge. Oh, wow. This guy comes from Brand X. And they get in and they influence policy so that it helps Brand X. And then, okay, my time is done here. I'm going back to Brand X.
Yeah. It's a classic case of corruption.
Yes.
And there's no real way to sugarcoat it.
No.
It's corruption, plain and simple, and a derailing of our democracy. And so the Dark Act is designed to keep us in the dark about if there are GMOs in our foods. So it was a slim win for the opposition. In the Senate, it was 49-48 saying, for the Dark Act. So it'll
But look at what it took to get over. That's the thing, Ellen. Look at what it took to get over the hurdles put up by all these people who have corrupted the system as we've described it.
Well, here's the good news. People have the ultimate power. Mm-hmm. And people raised a big ruckus in all the states trying to pass GMO laws, and there were a lot of petitions, and, you know, there was a lot of pressure from citizens to overturn the Dark Act or not pass it.
I think there were 700,000 calls, and that's really the way to influence policy is to actually call, I think, don't you?
Calling and the online petitions also work. So it's good to do both. Of course, the more you do, the better. But even if you just do online petitions, it really does move the needle in the right direction. So I have a whole list of petition wins that have occurred. So at first I thought, they don't really do much, but they actually do a lot.
Let's talk about that.
Love for us to think that they don't.
Let's talk about petition wins and how they affect what people are growing and what people are eating, what their choices are. I think it would be helpful from your perspective if you would share that with us in a moment. Stand by. We'll continue as we focus on this way. This is a problem. We're trying to get a universal approach to solving problems like this with Ellen Moyer, who's a writer, contributes to the Huffington Post. Here on The American Family Farmer, I'm Doug Steffen. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, or on the farm, if you will, this is this week's edition of The American Family Farmer. I'm Doug Steffen with Ellen Moyer, who writes for the Huffington Post, is an activist working on things that help us to understand how we can better have the food choices that we are entitled to. It is not a right and a privilege. Well, I guess that maybe it is not something that should be you may or may not have it. You have by right the ability to choose your food. So you ought to have all the information possible, right?
Yeah, I think it is a constitutional right to know what's in our food. I'm not a lawyer, of course. I'm an environmental engineer. But don't we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? GMOs can shorten our lives.
Right. And you can make the decision if you have the information. If you want to choose to eat crap, that's up to you. And I don't say that facetiously. As long as you got the choice and it's based on information that you want to have, and this bill would have kept you from being able to have your state, whether Vermont, Maine, Connecticut have passed these, and as Ellen said, another 20-some-odd states are considering the legislation, which just brings you to the truth of what is in the food, GMO, non-GMO. And they talked about, this is the thing that bothers me, Ellen, about this, the lies. It's going to cost that character, I was going to say something else, chairman of the Ag Committee from Kansas, Mr. Roberts, says it's going to cost $8 billion to the farming industry because of labeling. I mean, who in their right mind would believe that? Campbell's Soup has got the information on their things. Now they tell you whether there's GMO stuff in there. Didn't cost them a nickel.
Yeah, no, industry always whines when there's a new requirement. You know, if there's new fuel efficiency standards for cars, the automakers whine, oh, it's going to cost jobs, you know, your car's going to be more expensive, and whining.
Yeah.
And then the change is made, and they adapt fine, and everybody's happy. So, so it's just a knee-jerk reaction. And actually, now, not only Campbell's Soup, but General Mills, Mars, and Kellogg's have all said we're going to voluntarily labeled GMOs.
Right.
So the House of Cards is coming down, and it's coming down because of citizen pressure.
Right.
And we're going to soon be like the other 64 countries in the world that require GMO labeling. Mm-hmm. Even China requires GMO label.
Isn't it funny how we say things like that?
Well.
Even China, right, yeah.
So
it's not like we're on the cutting edge of this.
It's a good thing because it's bringing to light to ordinary people just what the state of our government really is.
Mm-hmm.
And food is personal. You know, what our bodies are composed of, our very selves, what we're composed of, do we have a right to know? Well, I think so. I think most people would say yes. And it's a very obvious thing. So I think good things may come of this, and maybe we'll clean house in the government. You know, we need government. The answer isn't to get rid of government. The answer is to get rid of corruption
yes.
in government.
Yeah. I want to talk. I do want to get this some of these petitions that have worked and talk a little more about sustainability as we continue here. This is this week's edition of the American Family Farmer. I'm Doug Steffen with environmental engineer Ellen Moyer on the program. On the American Family Farmer for this week, our focus on the Dark Act and corruption in government and how it affects agriculture, the food you eat, the choices you have. Ellen Moyer is an environmental engineer, a writer, contributor to a number of magazines and newspapers, talking about the government in this circumstance with the Dark Act, trying to override GMO labeling, but a lot of countries around the world have it. We are not exactly, as I said a minute ago, on the cutting edge here. But you said there are other ways that have been demonstrated by people to get things like this overturned in the government. So I thought I'd give you a moment or two or as much time as you want to go through a list of some of these circumstances, especially as they affect food and our choices there. What sort of petition movement has won the day, as you described it earlier?
Okay, well, I'll go through my folder here. I'm not sure how many have to do with food, but this first one, I guess, is related to food. It's about plastic in our oceans. You know, by 2050, if we don't get our act together, we're going to have more pounds of plastic in the ocean than pounds of fish. So that does affect our food supply.
Well, and fishing is considered now an agriculture. If you go to the banks that are supporting agriculture, you'll see most of them are doing loans for ag businesses, and fishing. They're pretty much considered the same now. So
okay.
It applies.
Well, here's a petition that went to the, American Chemistry Council, an industry group. And a lot of people petition, say, hey, you know, do something about this. And here's the response from the American Chemistry Council. Quote, your staff recently delivered a petition with nearly 70,000 signatures from your members urging ACC to work with Ocean Conservancy and others to keep plastic from reaching the ocean. The large number of signatures underscores for us how many people are committed to keeping plastic out of the ocean, and we want to know, and who want to know, that we are committed to doing something about it. Please tell your members that ACC has heard them and that we're committed to being part of the solution. So there's a,
well,
a good
let me,
evidence.
Let me try to. I got an email from somebody last week who said, by the way, the email address is doug@dougsteffen.com. If you want to send me comments about the programs, what you want me to talk about, what issues you have that need to be solved or addressed, somebody was critical because it seems that I'm very anti-government. And I am. I'm anti-authority, not just anti-government, because I think that for the most part, in many circumstances, not everyone, as Ellen has pointed out, but in many circumstances, they are self-serving. They're here to serve themselves, not to serve you. And the bureaucracy
yeah.
gets bigger all the time. So, but to turn it around a little bit, because I am critical, wildly critical of Walmart, But they have done, and Cargill and ADM and Unilever and that bunch. But there is a sustainability study that's out now, Ellen, which suggests that these people that are running these companies now are beginning to think more about the big picture, and they are working to help when it comes to the use of water and the methane gases and our footprint, environmental footprint. They and others are stressing sustainability because that's what people are saying they want. That's why
right.
what you've said is working.
Yeah. The consumer and the citizen runs the show here. If
yeah.
we say we want grass-fed beef, farmers will provide it, and they'll switch from industrial to grass-fed beef. And if we want sustainability, corporate will provide it. And don't forget, we often forget that corporations are made up of people. And even the CEO has kids.
Mm-hmm.
And may actually care about the future for their kids. So I think there's a yearning even at the top level of corporations to find a better way. It's just becoming very obvious that we're not going down the right path. But I would like to take issue just with one thing you said, and that
Please.
Is about government. The other side wants us to say, government's bad, we got to get rid of it. No, that is not the right response. We need more government. We just need government working for us instead of working for
corporate. Well, I would straighten it. I would, all right, so we don't make this an argument. More government doesn't necessarily mean better government. Better government doesn't have to be bigger. It just needs to work. And it doesn't now because it's so bloated. There's so many people.
Yeah.
I can tell you as a farmer, the kinds of foolishness that I had to deal with as I was selling raw milk and cheeses and stuff. And people who came to my farm, they didn't know a damn thing about what I was doing.
I know. It has to be good. It has to be smart.
Right.
But.
Yeah.
You know, if we pass all these laws and then don't fund people to enforce them, then the laws are as good as not there.
Then you get into the question of which laws are good and valuable and which laws aren't. So then we have another conversation. But I think in general, we would agree that the best form of government is the efficient form of government that understands what the people want. Because, hello, that's why they're there. They're not there to serve themselves. They're there to serve the people that are paying the bill. And that's us. Ellen Moyer is here. We continue our conversation on the American Family Farmer in a few moments. Please stand by. Three and change after the hour now. We're into the second half hour of this week's visit on the American Family Farmer. I'm Doug Steffen with Ellen Moyer, who's an environmental engineer. She's a writer. She understands, has studied what the government is doing, what regulators are doing, what the private sector is doing. We're sort of talking about sustainability in a way, but I don't like to use some of this jargon because I think it gets overused and misunderstood, Ellen. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. I think one thing we should bring up that's really important about GMOs is the issue of pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pesticides include insecticides, herbicides, rodenticides, fungicides, all the things that kill. And we've adopted this, like, chemical warfare mentality for agriculture in industrial agriculture, and it's an outgrowth of World War II. I mean, pesticides were largely developed from experience with mustard gas and other things like that.
And then it went on Vietnam War. It was more of the same.
Yeah, and what the GMO crops are designed to do is to enable crops to withstand heavy dousing with pesticides. So everything else is wiped out and the one crop is left standing. So it's a really terrible strategy because, first of all, pests develop resistance, and pretty soon those pesticides don't work. But the other thing is, the pesticides are bad for us.
Yeah.
So we're among the species that gets the short end of the stick with that strategy. So
I would say I'd add one more piece to the pie. As a farmer, an agrarian who understands the land, I don't use chemical fertilizers. When I plant corn, I get rid of the weeds with a cultivator. And certainly because I use manure, I have a sort of witch's brew of horse manure, cow manure, chicken manure. Usually, if I can find pig manure, I do it. But it enhances all kinds of things, nitrogen, potash, the stuff we need to not just make the crops grow. This is something that I think sometimes you get, if you'll pardon the pun, too much into the weeds because people don't know that much about it. But there's a difference between getting stuff into the ground that will help the plants grow. It doesn't necessarily help the soil. And so what's in the soil is what you are ultimately going to eat. And that's what I think Ellen's trying to say here.
Well, we're missing we're not only missing the good stuff, the micronutrients and so on from the soil and having beneficial bacteria, but we're wiping out pollinators and we're having chemical contamination. You know, GMO crops are mostly designed to withstand heavy dosings of Roundup, the herbicide.
Kill the weeds.
Roundup,
and the other,
whose main ingredient is glyphosate. And the World Health Organization last year, around March of last year, said glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen. Animals develop cancer, and there's every reason to think we would too, because we share a lot of genes with other species. So all this glyphosate is getting into surface water, groundwater, soil. It's getting into people, and it's really bad news. It gets into food. So we've seen what glyphosate does to poison ivy. It's pretty dramatic, right? Roundup. Is that something you want in
your body?
Not really.
No.
So we have this terrible problem of pesticide poisonings. In fact, there are 10,000 to 20,000 physician-diagnosed pesticide poisonings in the U.S. each year. This is agricultural workers. So your listeners should be pretty concerned about I think they already are concerned about being contaminated by chemical pesticides. So that is another risk that people are facing. So everybody loses with this GMO type of production except, you know, big agriculture.
Yeah.
And the whole scene is swayed by subsidies. Our government subsidizes crops like corn, soy, wheat, even tobacco.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you can stop at tobacco when you realize how horrible that is. And then you get into a lot of, in my world, I tend to, with farms that I either use or stuff that I own myself, I want to turn back into the soil as much as I can. I do feed corn to the cows, but there are things that I can get a hold of or I can create. There's this new thing called biochar. Have you seen anything about that, Ellen?
Yeah, I'm skeptical of biochar as being another excuse for logging. And logging is a whole nother topic I'm really involved in that would be a whole different conversation, but I don't know a lot about biochar.
I don't know. I wasn't looking at it from the point of view that you just suggested that in terms of forestation, reforestation. All I know is that what it is, I've read recently the new Deepak Chopra book, which connects DNA, the Genome Project, and how we all are. Everything that exists, not only on our planet, but probably in the universe, is all carbon-based. And the organic side of this. We need carbon and oxygen and other gases. Nitric oxide now has become the third most important gas, it would seem, to our bodies. So where is all this stuff produced? In terms of nitric oxygen, it comes from non-GMO beets and other vegetables. And so if you're using this to the business about nitric oxide, opening up your veins and your arteries to get blood around every part of your body, that's the kind of working in the body that you need to sustain your health. And if you ruin, I'm trying to give you a practical example here, if you ruin the atmosphere in which the beets or the corn or whatever it is growing, you're going to do what Ellen is suggesting. You're going to corrupt your body. The organic waste being used back into the soils is something, and again, I think I may be digging a deeper hole than I need to, but it's just representative of how we think about what we put into the soil, or if we even think about it at all, or even if the consumer thinks about what's in the soil.
Well, we should think about it, and organic growing worked very well for 12,000 years, so we definitely don't need this industrial agriculture. And some people call industrial agriculture conventional. I don't. I think it's totally very weird and out in left field. You know, poisoning your food. What is up with that?
Poisoning the soil. Never mind just the food. I go back to what I said about what the food is going to be, what's in the soil. And if you've got nothing in the soil, or you've got bad stuff in the soil, that's what because the root structure is going to absorb with the moisture that goes into the plant whatever's in the soil.
Exactly. Yeah, we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
But as far as people are concerned, they might be more alarmed at, ooh, the food I'm eating is contaminated versus the soil is contaminated. But yeah, both are true. Things move around in the ecology. You know, they don't stay put. So if we put gallons of Roundup on the soil, it's going into the soil, it's screwing up the microbiology there, and it's contaminating the soil, and it's getting into the plants. And then it's getting into things that eat plants, like meat.
So whatever's in there, you're going to end up eating, and that's why the HGH with the milk and any of those things. All right, we'll pause for a moment and finish our conversation with Ellen Moyer in a moment. This is Doug Steffen. You're listening to this week's American Family Farmer. The continuation now of our conversation on the American Family Farmer with Ellen Moyer, who's an environmental engineer, an activist, and a writer. We started talking about the DARC Act and have gone on into other decision-making, whether it comes from corporations or it comes from the government or it comes from you, because you ought to be the ultimate concern these people have. And I guess it's our definition of you, because you can listen to a lot of these people. I remember Forbes magazine, and I've always had high regard for Steve Forbes, but when I saw him anoint the Monsanto company and the CEO of Monsanto as the businessman of the year a few years ago, I about lost my lunch. And after that, I lost a little bit of respect, at least for his ability to understand what the real world is all about. But then the real world for one person, Ellen, may not be the same as the real world for another. The people who are doing these things say, we're doing it for you. We're doing it to produce more food, because there will be people who will be hungry if we don't grow as much food as we possibly can on the land that's available. And so we're really doing a public service.
Yeah, and that's just bogus. You know, we waste 40% of the food that's produced in the U.S., all up and down the food chain. So there's a lot of people have refuted that kind of argument, like Francis Moore LePay, who wrote Diet for a Small Planet. There's plenty of food to go around, and yields of organic approach those of industrial farming, you know, 80%, 90%. And in terms of nutrition, they're about equal. And methods are being developed to match and even exceed the yields of industrial. And the UN says that the only way to feed the world sustainably is with organic, because industrial ruins the soil. So
yeah.
You can't keep it going. So
yeah.
There's nothing
plays
there.
Out.
There's no evidence to back up those claims. They're just scare tactics. And on the GMO issue, you know, there's one part of it is knowing what's in our food so we can choose correctly, right?
Yeah.
But the other thing is that our choices are skewed. We started to talk about subsidies.
Yes.
Well, subsidies go to those crops that are made into junk food. And what this does is it makes junk food cheaper than healthy food. So people who are struggling financially, they're going to buy the crappy food because it's cheaper. So it's really backwards, because people are going to get diabetes and more sickness and cancer, and the healthcare costs are going to go up. And, you know, everybody suffers from that kind of thing. So we need to get rid of these perverse subsidies that point people in the wrong direction. If we should either get rid of subsidies like the organic farmer Joel Salatin wants to do.
Yeah, he's been on this program a number of times.
Fruits and vegetables and organic, but we're doing the opposite.
What we ought to be doing, and this somehow or other happened during, this goes back to the 1930s after the Dust Bowl, and when farming collapsed in our country and the economy collapsed in our country. And so under the circumstances, a lot of things were passed that, you know, you get one government program in and it never goes away. That's one of the problems. But the help that was supposed to be sustaining for that period has just kept going and going and has been completely just corruption galore here. So
yeah.
Let me just point you in. We're out of time here, Ellen. EllenMoyerPhD.com. EllenMoyerPhD.com is where you can find her website, EllenMoyerPhD.com. More information and conversation about all these things that do affect your health, your well-being, and knowing that if you don't respect and treat and love the soil, eventually it's going to take a dumper, and nobody's going to be happy about that. So, Ellen, thank you for calling that and other things to our attention. Appreciate your being here with another point of view. I'm Doug Steffen, continuing in a moment with the American Family Farmer. This is the American Family Farmer. I'm Doug Steffen, and now this comment. We've had a lot of discussion on this program. Some people think it's a little lopsided, but it isn't, if you understand my passion, my philosophy. I'm a dairy farmer. I've been around cows all my life. I've sold raw milk and cheeses and things. That's what gives me my papers, my bona fides, if you will, in having these conversations, the credibility that I have as a farmer, going along with my credibility as a broadcaster, hosting a Monday through Friday 6-hour radio program that's aimed at the general interests of everybody. But I do talk a great deal about food, our food services, our food supply, and I try to help people understand, and this is I admitted my bias a long time ago, and I don't mind admitting my bias, because I think what I've learned on the farm growing up around the cows is how they respond to the care and treatment that makes them better animals and therefore produce a better product. That's just the way I think. And I think you can use the same philosophy, if you will, when talking about not only animals, but the food that comes from the ground, respecting the ground, the dirt, the things that we are hoping to sustain or, in fact, enhance. Part of the problem is that the incentive is to grow more and not necessarily think of the ramifications. Part of that comes from the government continuing to tell us through a lot of, just promotional things that we've got to grow more and more and more. We have to take care of our country, and we've become the breadbasket of the world. So when we're confronted with this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that you've heard talked about, the TPP, which in my estimation is probably one of the worst things for the American family farmer that you could possibly imagine. It does do things for exporting, but it encourages the big, huge farms to grow more so we can ship more. It doesn't refer to quality. It just refers to quantity. And by the way, that goes not only for produce, but it goes for milk as well. America's dairy farmers are going to get screwed. They will have no future if this Trans-Pacific Partnership is put into place. And that's one of the things. It might be good for the grain growers, but there's no way that anybody in the dairy business thinks this is going to be good for them, unless you're a huge dairy, industrial dairy producer, and then maybe some of the ancillary benefits of this amount of cheese and powdered milk and stuff that gets sold, that may help you out a bit. But in reality, what this thing will allow and encourage is for some of the huge producers in New Zealand and in Australia and in China to load up a 747 tanker and fly that milk every day to San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, and up in Canada too, but more in the United States. Any place where there is an easily accessed airport, the stuff there, the animals they're growing and the milk that they're producing is horrible, but it's cheaper. And this partnership allows these people to get the product to us cheaper than we can. I mean, how do you even understand this? There are going to be the foreign interests want to tax our produce, milk, dairy, that sort of thing, to an extent that it won't be attractive. And we want to make it easy for them to bring dairy and other things into our country so it'll be more attractive for us to buy. It would seem to me that it shoots in the foot every single thing that you hear about when it comes to politicians talking about how we have to enhance this, make the American family farmer better. The American family farmer is going to disappear, in my estimation. You look at some of the reports out of Cornell University, for example, or you can take up any, look around for the information that's here. There are lots of endorsements from various big organizations that, like the National Milk Producers Federation, that say Trans-Pacific Partnership is good. No, it's not. It's not. It may be good for the producer, but that doesn't mean the producer is always the farmer. The farmer is defined by producing organizations as a producer, but that's not really who they are. So I hope you take this to heart, and if you're smart, I say that in sort of quotation marks or brackets, you'll call your senator and your congressman, do the same thing you did for the DARC Act. Tell them no on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, because it's bad for agriculture, bad for the locavore, bad for America, which are the three components of the people we serve here on the Weekly American Family Farmer. I'm Doug Steffen.